From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the psychic lawyer joins us, Mark Anthony, not the singer. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Oh, that death toll now linked to the listeria-contaminated cantaloupes in the United States has now climbed to 28. Almost unbelievable. Whole or pre-cut Rocky Ford brand cantaloupe from the Colorado-based Jensen Farms have been traced as the cause of what has now become the deadliest U.S. foodborne listeria outbreak in a quarter century. A total of 133 people in 26 states have fallen ill so far in the outbreak, according to the CDC. Here's food safety expert Jeff Nelkin with us. Jeff, how are these people dying so many days after this outbreak?
Well, Listeria, you know, has a length of reach, you know, has an incubation period of about 2 to 6 weeks. So that's why you're hearing about some of this taking longer. So this is not just a matter of 2-3 days and it's over. So we're getting the tail end of that 6 week spread from the Listeria that we're talking about.
Jeff, I was in the store today. I looked at a whole bin full of cantaloupes and I walked right past it. I'm leery to buy it. Is that foolish?
Well, you know, it's, we look at it and we think it's kind of innocent. You're right. I feel the same way. I'm thinking twice. But keep in mind that so far they've identified at this particular farm that they discontinued the sanitizing of the cantaloupe, at one. Number two, that equipment that was used in the processing of the cantaloupes was originally used for potatoes, and they found that this potato processing equipment wasn't easily cleanable, but they found chunks of dirt on it, and they found listeria in those chunks of dirt, and they also found standing water in the, you know, in the facility that they were processing. So there were quite a few issues once they started to dig in that they found listeria, which, you know, hides in dirty spots, hides in areas that are difficult to clean.
Jeff's website.
First lesson to be learned.
What's new at foodsafetycoach.com?
We're keeping our eyes open and trying to educate consumers. Again, you know, there's E. coli and ground beef that you're going to be hearing about the next couple of days. Just to remind everyone, please cook your hamburger to at least 155 degrees, and don't judge hamburger doneness by the color of the meat.
And, Jeff, as we get close to Thanksgiving, I want to have you back on to talk about some tips for that, okay?
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff Nelkin. If you're somebody who likes medicine and you want to be perfect with that, you're not going to be happy by a report in the journal The Lancet. The report looked at flu vaccines and finds that only about 59% are effective in adults who receive the shot. The report is based on 31 studies going way back to 1967. The study also found that the newer nasal spray, which is used in children 6 months to 7 years of age, works about 83% of the time, they say. Cannabis, marijuana, pot causes the same type of chronic brain activity seen in people with schizophrenia. Now, according to British scientists, researchers from Bristol University in Western England made the discovery after measuring the brain neurons of rats that were given the psychoactive ingredient of cannabis. Powerful Hurricane Rina is on a collision course with the Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, then could impact Florida's peninsula. Rina remains a dangerous storm in the northwestern Caribbean, churning less than 400 miles off coast. It's getting very close to a Category 3. President Barack Obama announcing plans to ease the burden of student loans on college graduates by capping federal student loan repayments at 10% of discretionary income. White House officials said it would help up to 1.6 million people and reduce their loan payments each month by as much as a couple hundred dollars. We'll monitor that story. The tumbling German satellite Rosette re-entered the Earth's atmosphere over the Bay of Bengal. We've got that story at coasttocoastam.com for you. This means any satellite components that survived the fiery plunge would have splashed into the ocean, avoiding populated areas. And an Englishman called emergency after spotting a mysterious object hovering above his house. only to find out it was the moon. The man made the call, not thought to be a prank, in a state of panic, saying the objects, the lights were everywhere, blazing away. However, he called back later and said, I was mistaken. It was not a UFO. It was the moon. In a moment, we're going to be talking with Paul Smith, remote viewer. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. You know, one of my dear friends, Paul Smith, spent 20 years as an Army intelligence officer and 7 of those years as a remote viewer for the military Stargate remote viewing program. He has trained a number of people in remote viewing, and tonight we're going to be talking with him about some new things that are going on. Here he is, back on Coast to Coast, Paul Smith. Hey, Paul, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. I'm always happy to be back with you, George.
Well, let me tell you something. Your name's come up on several interviews over the last couple of weeks from a number of our guests, including Bill Burns. So you have had an impression, my friend, on a lot of people. What's new these days?
Well, I have had a busy year. A lot of it, unfortunately, not remote viewing oriented, but having to do with fairly major family problems, which I think are behind us for now. So,
well, that's good. That's good. Weren't you in France?
I was, yes. Now, that was remote viewing related, and that's really kind of an exciting situation. I've actually made 2 trips to France this year. First one is in March. They had the first ever non-U.S. remote viewing conference in Paris in March. It was just it was an amazing time. They filled up the hall. The French are really excited about this stuff. And so I and some people you know really well, Jacques Vallée and
Russell
Park, among others, were there at the conference, and the French were eating it up. Although we did have people come from quite a ways away, Italy and Spain and and other places too.
I got a text from a friend of mine today, and she said, "Remote view me, I dare you, give it a try." And you know, a lot of people are catching on to remote viewing these days, Paul, aren't they?
They are, and that's a good thing. The conference, I want to say, led to something else. I went back last month, and I taught an advanced course to a couple of French students that had come to the States before for my classes. But then we did something very exciting. We did some psychic archaeology, if you will, using remote viewing this time.
Now tell me about that.
Well, we went to a location I can't disclose out in the provinces of France. And this was kind of the culmination of a project that's been going on for about 5 years, looking for undiscovered cave art out in the French countryside.
What kind of art?
Well, it's the prehistoric, the buffalo and the horses and all that stuff that the old cavemen, if we can still use that archaic term, you know, painted on the walls of the cave. And a lot of it, of course, has been discovered in France, but there's this suspicion that the best stuff remains to be uncovered. And so we went out there with the goal of locating as closely as possible where some of these thus far undiscovered cave art sites are, and describing in general details what might be there. This is not the project is still going on, so we haven't yet identified how successful we've been, but we've identified several very likely sites, and we're working on getting permission from the property owners to actually explore those sites.
Paul, I would love to stumble across caves that would have pictures, for example, of flying saucers and strange things. You know, they're out there. We've seen some of them, but gosh, I would love to find that. Wouldn't you?
I would not rule out the possibility.
No, not at all. What is happening in terms of government and remote viewing? You know, as everybody knows by now, the government channeled and had a lot of remote viewers working in the program, you being one of them. Do you think, and I've asked you this before, but, you know, as we find Bin Laden, as we find people like that, I wonder if there are some government remote viewers out there still practicing. Now, the cream of the crop, that's, you know, those are you folks, and you're not doing it for the government.
Let me tell you, if remote viewers were behind finding Bin Laden, they may well be the cream of the crop. I'm happy to give credit where credit is due. Obviously, I have no inside information. I don't know that they were involved in it. tell you, if they have been involved in any of the successful operations that have gone on out there, they're really doing good work. And so I'm hoping that they are.
Would it surprise you if we had remote viewers working in government?
Yeah, it would surprise me, but it would be a modified surprise because, of course, we keep hearing rumors about it. Never anything substantiated, but always these little rumors floating around. So I like to hold out the possibility. Now, of course, when you've asked me that question before, I've been fairly pessimistic about it, and I still have some pessimism about it.
Yeah.
I do know that the government has used remote viewers off and on for ad hoc projects. I mean, I and my little group did a project for one of the Army major commands back in 2007 trying to locate a missing American soldier. But as far as I know, there's not an actual program going on, but the possibility is tantalizingly there that there might be still somewhere hidden in the bowels of Langley, you know.
Paul, you've been working on some random event generators. Tell me what this is all about.
Yeah, that's an interesting development in remote viewing research. Very quickly, a random event generator is an electronic device that generates a true random stream of numbers. In other words, it just generates these arbitrary kinds of streams of numbers. And if you know anything about, well, I know you do. If your audience knows anything about the Global Consciousness Project, you'll know that when humans start focusing on a major event like 9/11 or the death of Princess Diana or something like that, these random number generators that are running all the time depart from randomness and they create these graphs that are just amazing, showing that people's consciousness are focused. Well, it turns out that remote viewing events can do that as well. So in terms of what I mean by remote viewing event, they even respond to individual people if the experiment is set up right. So when someone is remote viewing, oftentimes you'll see the random event generator respond to that, even though it's across the room, not anywhere near the remote viewer. And so we did an experiment back in 2008 where we tested that. And we did 36 remote viewing sessions with 6 remote viewers, and we found a very strong correlation between certain phases of remote viewing sessions and the random number generator reacting to that,
even though
there was no connection. So I've leveraged that. I've created this workshop where I've gone out, and in fact, I did this in France. This is another thing I did when I was in France.
Oh, okay.
Got a room full of people, introduced them to the remote viewing, and set the random event generator going, and then had them remote view for the first time a target, and to see if the event generator actually reacts. And it's pretty interesting to see the process, see how this is going, and compare people who've never done it to people who have done it. And I think ultimately we'll generate some useful scientific evidence that consciousness does indeed extend beyond the boundaries of our skulls, which, of course, is what remote viewing does. But the more ways we can demonstrate this, the more likely it is that mainstream science will start paying attention.
Do you come up with any problems at all? Do you come, you know, headbutt a problem with the remote viewing or any of these experiments?
In other words, are we trying to solve a problem with it?
Well, do you find more problems as you get into this?
In terms of the random event generator, you're asking?
Yeah.
Well, what we do is find more interesting anomalies. Like when we first started out, we thought the generator might respond when remote viewers were on target. So we were hoping it was kind of like a remote viewing lie detector, in a sense, because that's always the issue. When a remote viewer does a session against an unknown target, is he or she accurate or not? And you can't really tell until you find out more about the target from other means. And so if we could correlate the random event generator reacting with accuracy in remote viewing, that would be wonderful. Well, it turns out it doesn't do that. What it seems to do is focus more on points in the session when the viewer's consciousness is interacting more with the target, whether or not the data is all that much more accurate or not. So when you're getting sensory experiences from the target, the generator reacts to that in some way, or at least appears to. And we're still sorting all this out. We don't know what all this means. We got to do more experiments. And so I'm going to be doing more workshops, collecting more data and seeing what we can ultimately find out about it.
Paul, what are some of the pluses of and upsides of remote viewing for people, individuals?
Wow, there's a lot. just a few. One, of course, is that it helps enhance a person's intuition. Even when you're not remote viewing, you seem to be more alert to the universe and the things you may need to be aware of. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to pick up on everything that you need to from a distance, but I know I've noticed in my life that I will get these, what used to be called hunches, but I'll get these intuitions, and I've learned to pay attention to them, and they turn out to be right. And so essentially when you're remote viewing, you're getting information, and that's very useful, but you turn remote viewing on and off. But you don't turn off your intuition, and the more remote viewing you do, kind of the more sensitive to these little tripwires of consciousness, the indicators that we have to warn us and alert us to things we need to pay attention to. And so that's one. It enhances your intuition.
Which is important.
Absolutely. I think anybody can benefit from that. A lot of times people will have what they think are intuitive things because they haven't learned to really distinguish between the noise in our head and the true intuitions that are coming in. And that's what remote viewing does, is it helps you learn to distinguish noise from signal in what is usually a very noisy environment, which is our heads, you know, because we're always thinking and random thoughts coming in and all that. So,
Paul, can it backfire? Can it backfire if people get greedy? Let's say somebody wants to remote view and find out who's going to win the World Series or wants lottery numbers or things like that, where it could be financially beneficial. But is there a greed factor here that backfires on a remote viewer?
What happens when you're attempting to use remote viewing for investing or whatever? I have found, and this is what I teach in my associate remote viewing classes, the viewer cannot know what is resting on the outcome. If for example, you've just bet $100,000 that Team X is going to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
You don't want the viewer to know there's $100,000 riding on that bet, because what happens is it isn't a remote viewing problem. It's a psychological problem. The viewer essentially chokes. You know, that adds this huge emotional component to it that can get in the way of successfully remote viewing the outcome that you need to remote view. And so that is one problem if you're trying to use this to make a profit. As you've heard, some people say, well, you can't use your psychic faculties to make money. That turns out not to be true at all. I know a number of people who've made money. In fact, my son's university class, which had been studying parapsychology, did an ARV experiment, and they turned $10,000 seed money into $27,000 in 7 straight trades that were all correct. So you can make money. There's no question about that. But if the viewers know what's resting on the outcome, then just the potential consequences, good or bad, can close down the system.
And you really can't think when you're remote viewing, Paul. You really got to just, you know, blank your brain and just let the first thoughts come in, right?
Thinking will get you in trouble. Absolutely. Yep. I like to use, rather than the term thinking, but figuring it out. If you're trying to figure out what the target is, all that does is get your left brain going, which always gets in the way of the remote viewing process. Unfortunately, it's really hard to blank out your brain, but what you do learn in remote viewing is how to sort out the information that's coming in. You learn to know what's just generated by your left brain and what is actual signal. And people who've remote viewed for a long time and have practiced it in the way it should be practiced actually tend to be pretty good at knowing what's noise and what isn't, and they end up producing quite good results.
What makes a bad remote viewer, Paul?
Someone who can't get his or her ego out of the process. Someone who thinks his or her ego depends, that their self-worth depends on being successful, getting it right all the time. Ironically, they're most likely to get it wrong. It's a Zen-like thing where the more invested you are in a particular outcome, the more worried you are about how it's going to turn out, the less likely it is going to turn out the way you want it to. And the less you worry about the outcome, the more you have the attitude of, well, let's just see what happens, the more likely you are to have a successful result.
That's a good point. Stay with us, Paul Smith. His website, rviewer.com, and also learndowsing.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's also the author of Reading the Enemy's Mind. We will come back, talk more about remote viewing, and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, my goal, 2,000 brand new Coast Insiders every month. So we started in October. We've done it. We have gone over the 2,000 level for brand new Coast Insiders. Members of the Coast Insiders Club, I'll share the actual numbers with you after Halloween when the month is over. And that's what the goal is for the next 12 months. And all you have to do is go to coasttocoastam.com, click the Coast Insider little verbiage that you find at the top of the homepage, and you can become a member of the Coast Insiders Club for less than 25 cents a day. By the way, next hour, psychic Mark Anthony joins us, not the singer. He's a psychic lawyer, and we'll come back in a moment with remote viewer Paul Smith, and we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, you were talking earlier how remote viewing can enhance one's intuition. Is there a difference between remote viewing and being psychic?
There is somewhat of a difference, and they both rely, I think, on the same underlying human faculty that all of us have. And for a long time, I thought there was a huge difference between the two, but I've learned some new things over the last year, and realize that they're closer, actually, than I thought they were. But here's the main difference, of course. Remote viewing, it's done according to a certain protocol. The idea is that the viewer is blind to the target. The viewer remote viewing methods that help the viewer learn how to deal with mental noise.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, someone who is psychic has not learned that through any methodology. The really good psychics, they have learned through trial and error how to distinguish between the mental noise and the signal, and then they proceed on in kind of a free-form kind of an approach. Remote viewing is, of course, more rigorously put together. There's a certain procedure that you go through to do it. So there's the difference. The similarity, of course, is it comes from the same source in human nature. But originally, when Ingo Swann developed remote viewing and then the controlled remote viewing that I teach, Ingo's intent was to take someone who was not psychic at all, or at least had no awareness of being psychic, and teach that person in a way that made it quicker than the normal trial and error process to come to understand how it was to behave in a psychic way and get successful, accurate information that way. That was the whole purpose of this whole structure that Ingo Swann helped put off, and the folks at SRI that were involved with this put it together so that the military could learn it, and then, of course, now we who had been in the military are teaching other people that method. Now, people who we generally refer to as psychics, they just sort of learned it on their own, trial and error practice. Some of them probably had a bit of a talent at first that allowed them to exploit it. But what's interesting, and the reason I sort of started to see how the two come together a little bit more, is that one of my French students is really a very accomplished psychic. And he came and took remote viewing because he wanted to see if that would enhance his being psychic process.
Right.
He found out that the two of them together, remote viewing with being psychic, have made him much more powerful and much more effective.
Yeah, I would think so.
Doing this.
Ed Dames tells us that he has a difficulty pinpointing dates. He's made mistakes in terms of time before, and he's now, I would say, convinced that picking specific dates on remote viewing episodes are difficult at best. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's nice to hear Ed come around. You know, I've had this argument for a long time.
Yeah, he's come around. I think necessity. He's picked a couple events. They didn't happen. And, you know, he realizes that, you know, you may see something, but unless you see a newspaper with a date in your remote viewing or a calendar or something, you're not going to get that date.
That's exactly right. There's no time markers in the future. And so unless you find something to hang a specific time on, you don't know when what you're perceiving is actually going to occur.
That's right.
It's very challenging.
Let's go to the phones, Paul Smith. We'll pick it up. First of all, we'll go to Mike in San Antonio, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Hey, Mike, I was just down in San Antonio about 3 hours ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One thing. About 98, a friend of mine who's also in the military whenever we were around, I guess it would enhance or for some whatever reason, whatever you want to call it, psychic ability. And we both felt like about 98, somebody was building something in Florida, somebody DOD was building something in Florida to do remote viewing or something like that. You know of anything that took place in about 98?
Building something? What were they building, Mike? Do you know?
Oh, we both felt like it was a facility to do the remote view or use psychics or something like that for the military.
Okay, like a training facility.
No, like an operations facility.
Yeah, I don't know about where in Florida are you talking about?
I got the feeling it was like maybe Tampa.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know of anything that was done there. We, of course, were in Florida in 1990 working with Key West, and in Miami working with Joint Task Force 4 in the counter-narcotics arena. Had a fair amount of success at it, too. But as far as building a facility to use it in 1998, I don't know of anything about that. Of course, the Tampa area, there's a lot of special operations stuff going on around there. So if there was such a thing being done, it would kind of make sense that it would be there, but you know, I don't know of anything.
Does distance play a role in remote viewing, Paul? I mean, can you literally remote view the edge of the universe?
Well, it appears that it plays no role. Ingo Swann is famous for having remote viewed some facts about Jupiter that were unknown at the time he did it, and yet were confirmed by a space probe that reached there a few months after he did his remote viewing. As far as I know, that's the farthest confirmed remote viewing, but that's pretty darn far by our standards. So all of the experiments we've done, none of them have indicated that distance is a problem with remote viewing.
All right, let's go next to Pauline in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hey, Pauline, go ahead. You're on with Paul Smith.
Oh, hi to both of you.
Hello.
I may sound kind of dumb. I've listened to you and about talking about remote viewing quite often. But can you explain exactly what is remote viewing?
We will, Pauline, and you are not dumb. That's a great question.
Yeah, I suspect there's quite a few folks listening tonight who've not heard the explanation before. Remote viewing is a skill, actually, that nearly anybody can learn, that allows one to access one's native, innate, so-called psychic ability. It's a form of ESP, and it's done according to certain protocols and procedures. It allows a person who knows how to do it to perceive information, get impressions, information, what have you, observations, and so on, from a location that's distant from that person, from objects that might be hidden from that person, from even distant in time, events that have already happened, events that are going to happen, through mental means alone. So essentially, it's a form of clairvoyance, if you will, but one that there's some discipline and control applied to, so that you actually obtain the kind of information you're looking for from a hidden location, from a distant location, somewhere in time, what have you.
I think remote viewing is phenomenal, Paul. I mean, it's to me, it's one of the most exciting tools we have. It really is.
I agree. It's absolutely fascinating.
Portland, Oregon. Alyssa, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi.
George, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thanks.
I have a question. Okay. Whether your target or subject is chosen for you or something that you choose to focus in on, how would you go about homing in on it as far as distance or what you see around them or what they're wearing? And can you be able to remote view something that is not to happen, like, say, I'm looking for a husband, and I never get wind up meeting one. It doesn't happen in the future. Is that something that you would just not be able to grasp anything on?
Paul, you can remote the future, can't you?
Yeah, but I think what she's saying is remote view a future outcome that doesn't happen. I think is what, but there's several questions all rolled up into that one. Let's see.
Well, yeah, but how do we know it doesn't happen if it's in the future?
Well, for example, if she's using, for example, if she's looking for a husband and she remote views and gets a clear image of somebody,
right?
But then never meets that person.
Well, we don't know that. It could be a year, 5 years, 10 years. Who knows?
That's true. That would be a hard thing to check unless in some way you had a time limitation on it. But okay, so I'm not sure which other question there to
answer. Well, I would think that if she wants to remote view the future to look for her prospective husband or to see if she's going to get a prospective husband, if she's a good remote viewer, she'll either see this guy or she won't. And if she can't see him, let's say she's a good remote viewer. If she can't see the guy, well, then maybe the chances are she's never going to find him. Is that possible?
It's possible, or it just didn't work that time. that's, of course, the problem with remote viewing.
Well, that's true, and then you don't know.
Every time. Yeah.
That's right.
So if you don't succeed in remote viewing, you always have hope that you'll still end up with a husband. Well, in my case, I wouldn't care about the husband, but...
And you're married anyway, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. Yes,
so,
to a wife.
That's right. So you're in good shape there. Let's go to Mike in Hancock, Wisconsin. Hey, Mike, go ahead. You're up with
George,
us.
Hey, George, Semper Fi, brother.
You too, my friend.
Paul, now, George, you just had a guy on there about a month ago who did remote viewing, and your staff, the guy on the staff, was it Gaines or Gein? Or?
That's Ed Dames.
Okay. Now, I got one of his books at the library. Now this remote viewing is hard to follow for me. Now I just got Robert Cracknell's new book, Lonely Sense, a Psychic Detective.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to get in? Is remote viewing like a metal detector? Is it like a feeling? Can you have a vision?
Remote viewing is a way of perceiving, you know, like a location, an event, a person, or whatever, and getting information about that location, person, or event. So in that sense, it's descriptive. You're able to describe the location of something. If you are trying to actually pinpoint a location, instead of just, I say that's finding it, but you may not be able to say where it is exactly. You just describe its setting and hope you recognize it. If you're actually looking for locational data, there is a related discipline called dowsing, which you may or may not be familiar with. Dowsing is a method we adopted in the military, but of course it has ancient roots. We adopted to try and pinpoint the locations of things that we had already succeeded in describing. So, for example, you want to find Osama bin Laden. Okay, the remote viewer can say, well, there's this person in this long, narrow, rocky area, which reminds me of a cave. It's out in the mountains, The analyst will say, yeah, that's right, where is he? And the remote viewer will say, he's in this cave in the mountains. What don't you understand about that? So he's found the guy, but he hasn't located him. So dowsing helps do the other side of it, is locate. And you can use dowsing to pinpoint things that you've already described, but don't have a specific location for them. If you want to know about dowsing, you can go to my website. There's a banner there. You can get a free DVD that's kind of a documentary about dowsing. So if you want to find out about the locational process, that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Paul, I'm remote viewing you, and I see you on a tan-type couch doing this interview. How close
are you? I wish I was. It's a good thing you don't actually see where I am, because my office looks like an explosion in a paper factory.
Is there a couch there?
No, although I have to say the chair I'm sitting in is tan leather. Maybe that's what you're picking up.
Now, that's interesting. Okay. Do you have your feet up on the desk?
No, I'd probably destroy something if I tried that.
All right. There goes my test for the moment. Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Richard, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Rich.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Paul.
Hi.
Good evening.
I was wondering how you would compare remote viewing to an out-of-body experience.
Very good question, actually. And the fact is that they are different, at least experientially. So in remote viewing, well, let's go to the out-of-body first. In an out-of-body experience, so I've been told, I've never actually had one of them. In an out-of-body experience, you actually feel as if your whole consciousness, in fact, maybe your whole self in a certain way, has gone to a different location, and you lose track of the fact that you're physically somewhere else. You really feel like you've moved to this new location. In remote viewing, you can feel as if your consciousness is interacting or accessing a distant target or location, but you are still very much aware that you're sitting at a table writing on a piece of paper and making sketches and things. So there's this distinct difference in how it feels. Now, it's possible they're the same phenomenon, just different degrees. You have a continuum. On one end, you've got remote viewing. On the other end, you have a full-blown out-of-body experience. Whether or not that's true, it's hard to say, but I certainly entertain the possibility.
Why don't remote viewers perceive words and numbers? Why is it difficult for them?
Well, yeah, that's a challenging thing for a remote viewer. The irony here is that you'll get the skeptics. They'll say, well, if you're really psychic, why don't you just give me the lottery numbers?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well,
or give me the horse in the race or something.
Yeah, the name of the horse and the winning horse in the race. Well, it doesn't work that way, and the reason is very simple, based on human neurophysiology. As most people know these days, our brains are set up so that they're in two hemispheres, and there's a connecting bundle of nerve tissue that links the two together.
By the way, Richard Hoagland just sent me a message and said, George, I'm on a tan couch right now.
Oh, George, you're thinking about somebody else when you're supposed to be thinking about me.
See, there we go. Well, with Hoagland, you can't get away from him. So.
Anyway, so we have the split brain, and the right brain is generally, and of course this is very simplified, it's oversimplistic, a neuroscientist would probably say, but the right brain is generally optimized for receiving sensory input, holistic kind of information, all the kinds of information that we get from remote viewing. The left brain is set up for languages and numbers. Again, very simplified, but numbers. So the left brain's linear, numbers and words. Right brain is experiences, sensory impressions, and that kind of thing. So the problem is that since remote viewing seems to be taking place mostly in the right hemisphere, when the left hemisphere gets involved, it starts interjecting all kinds of noise, and that's what causes the biggest difficulty in remote viewing. So when you try and get numbers and letters, those are resident in the left brain. And as you try and come up with maybe the name for something or the sequence of numbers for the lottery, the left brain is going to contribute those things, but it's going to be making them up because it doesn't have access to the actual data. I'm distilling an hour-long discussion into about 3 minutes here, but you'll get the general idea. Because numbers and letters are in the left brain, and remote viewing is a right brain phenomenon, anytime you try and get numbers and letters, it turns out to be just nonsense.
All right, my friend. Paul Smith, of course, great book, Reading the Enemy's Mind. I'm glad he's on our side, he and the other remote viewers who worked for our government many, many years ago. And his websites, go ahead and take a look at them. They're linked up at coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, the psychic lawyer joins us, Mark Anthony, on Coast to Coast AM.